big old can. Good times, unwind, falling out of love in the same night.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. So good to be with you on this Monday. I've made it to my second week here. I haven't been terminated. That's a good sign, I think, just for life in general. So to come on the program today, we'll hear from Alabama Secretary of State John Merrill, my old colleague from WVNN up in Huntsville, Dell Jackson, and in the third hour, we will hear from State Representative Matt Simpson, who will join us in studio. Some things to talk about here just popping up on my screen. So make sure that you stay tuned. That'll be a great show. But joining us on the line, always a pleasure to introduce this next guest. He represents the 6th Congressional District. That's the area around Birmingham. Congressman Gary Palmer is on the line. Congressman, how are you today?
Good morning, Jeff, and congratulations on your move.
Hey, thank you very much. Very kind words. Let's get right into it. Tell us, I'm curious to see what you have to say about Trump's executive action over the weekend. It seems like it's treading into some constitutional dubious territory there, but what's your feeling on that?
Well, from a political perspective, it was a brilliant strategic move. Because it really puts Pelosi and Schumer over a barrel, and where they need to be, by the way, because they have not been bargaining in good faith. But from a constitutional perspective, I do think it violates Article 1 of the Constitution, violates the separation of powers. What's interesting, though, Jeff, is how this... how Pelosi and Schumer are going to have to deal with this in the context of what Obama did using executive orders. So when he did it, they were fine with it.
Right. And even early on with the Trump executive orders, there was always somebody out there willing to go judge shopping and find a Obama or Clinton-appointed judge to rule against this. The question is, will the Democratic Party be willing to do that when there seems to be a handful of giveaways involved with this executive order?
Well, absolutely they'll do it. They were doing it on legitimate executive orders, things that were totally within his authority. There'll be a judge that will challenge this immediately. But it really puts Pelosi and Schumer, again, like I said, over a barrel, because it brings into greater focus how they were just really trying to push a political agenda. They wanted $3.4 trillion. They wanted to bail out California and Illinois and some other states' pension plans. California and Illinois' unfunded liability, those two states, just those two, is $1 trillion. And... She has forgotten her role. I think she's been acting unconstitutionally in some of the things that she being Pelosi, has been doing.
Well, she's out front a lot more than it seems lately than she normally would be. Is it just a product of the election cycle, or is she really trying to? I mean, she seems more of the head of the Democratic Party these days than Joe Biden, the Democratic presidential nominee. Is she really trying to push this agenda, thinking that, I don't know, any of this Heroes Act or any of that, really she could win and court public opinion and get it done that way?
Well, she is being consistent in her philosophy of how to do this. If you go back and look at the 2009 Obama-Biden stimulus, it was $831 billion. They were talking about how that stimulus package would grow the economy at 4% per year by 2012. They were saying that it would create 250 to 500,000 jobs per month, and that it would add thousands of dollars to household income. What happened to that bill is the same thing that's happening to this bill. Is Pelosi loaded it up with pension bailout. She took the work requirements off of food stamps, expanded unemployment, and it resulted in the economy growing at 1.5%. We still had 9% unemployment, and household income went down by thousands of dollars. She's doing the same thing again, Jeff. There was a University of Chicago economist that looked at the 2009 stimulus package and talked about what Pelosi did, and he called it the redistribution recession.
Is that there does seem to be that you know, you do these big landmark type of things like the Heroes Act, you put $3 trillion in the economy. And perhaps this could be just the economics of it. You have that $600 a week incentive not to go back to work. That might make employers try to pay more. It's kind of like a backdoor approach to raising the minimum wage or raising wages, it seems, a little bit.
Well, that same University of Chicago economist looked at the 2009 package and what Pelosi did, and he determined that between 2 and 3 million people were earning, by not working, were earning 80 to 100% of what they had been earning when they did work. And he sarcastically commented that most economists agree if you pay people not to work, they don't work. If you look at the $600 per week that the federal government was adding to the state unemployment benefit, in Alabama, that was $21.87 an hour. There were 12 states where if you had dependents, they gave you additional unemployment benefits. And in Massachusetts, the average hourly rate for not working was $45.50 per hour. That's $94,000 a year. So that will crush economic recovery. And that's what she's trying to do. Plus, when you said $3 trillion to stimulate the economy, when you're putting trillions of dollars of that into bailing out pensions, that money's not going into the economy. That suppresses economic growth.
What is the right approach here? I get the ideological component. The government involved in the economy, never really a good thing. But if you had to go look for federal government stimulus, what do you think is the most effective approach?
Well, I think for one thing, We look at additional tax cuts and the payroll tax, removing that for the rest of the year. That puts money into the consumers' pockets. I think you increase the dependent exemptions and credits for families with kids. I think that we have to incentivize businesses, particularly moving the supply chain back to the United States with tax incentives. Those are the kind of things that I think that matter. I think we've got to get a vaccine. That will be huge for getting the economy going again. And we got to address some of the issues related to certain industries, like the restaurant industry, that there's no way they can operate at 50% capacity and stay in business. So there are a number of things that I think can be done that can help us get back on the right track. And keep in mind, Jeff, that they were projecting unemployment rates of up, 20%. We're at 11.3% right now. Alabama's below 8%. And if we weren't paying people not to work, I think it'd be even lower. I think people want to go back to work. And if we can make it safe for them to go back and allow the businesses to get going again, we'll see the economy grow again.
When we talk about repatriating some of these businesses and getting this supply chain back here, Is there a federal government response? Is there a price tag you could put on that? I mean, now we're throwing around trillions of dollars. What do you think it would take to get some of this back in the states?
Well, I don't think you do it overnight all at once, and you don't necessarily bring it all back to the states, but you want to get it out of countries that are hostile to you. This is not just an economic issue, it's a national security issue. And when you talk about your drug supply chain being 70-80% reliant on one country, in this case China, that's a huge problem. When you're talking about things like rare earth metals and other components that we have to have for everything from making your cell phone work to some of our military equipment, that's a problem. So it's not a short term fix, but there are things that we can do that I think that will help business bring that supply chain, at least if not back to the United States, back to countries that that are not hostile.
Because you look at that trend there, initially coming out of this, when we first went into lockdown, there's a lot of discussion about getting that supply chain back. It seems like it's been put on the back burner. Is that would be something to me that you look at the politics of it, it would be a winner for either Democrats or Republicans. But it doesn't seem to. It seems like it's kind of an afterthought at this time.
No, it's not an afterthought with us. I chair the policy committee. We've spent hours on this. The Republicans have a special task force just dealing with China that's chaired by Mike McCaul, who's the ranking member on the Foreign Affairs Committee. This is a top priority for us. But because we're in the minority, we have no chance of moving anything forward. The Democrats have no interest in anything other than one thing, and that is to defeat Donald Trump. They're obsessed with it.
Well, let's talk about that election coming up here in a matter of months. What's your crystal ball tell you? What's your outlook? You know, there was some hope before all of this pandemic that there was some hope that the House was in reach. Do you still feel that way today?
Yeah, I think the House is in reach. If the election were tomorrow, we would need to win 17 seats to get the majority back. But because of redistricting in North Carolina, we're going to lose 2 seats there. So we need 19. But there are 54 Democrat seats in play. 30 of them are in districts that the president won in 16. And 43 of them have better metrics than that special election we won in California back in May with Mike Garcia, our candidate. Won that by more than 10 points in a district that Hillary had won by 7 points and that the Democrat who had held that seat had won by 9 or 10. So I think the American people are smarter about what's going on than the Democrats give them credit for, and they see what happened last night in Chicago, what's happening in Portland, Seattle, and these other places. I don't think they want to hand the government over to people like that. So I think... And last week, Rasmussen poll showed the president's approval rating was back up to 51%. So, and one other point on this, Jeff, is the Cato Institute put out a report back in 16 that showed that 58% of the people were reluctant to talk about their positions on the presidential race or politics. They did that report again about a month or so ago, and it showed that that's actually 62% now. And I can guarantee you, if they were talking to Democrats, Democrats don't have a problem telling you what their positions are.
Well, it always seems like Democrats underperform when people actually go to vote, that they don't have the numbers. But we're told it's smooth sailing all the way to November. Biden has this. I think that is not necessarily accurate. But do you think Trump on the ballot, that seems to be a kind of a coattail phenomenon, and that may be more promising than what had happened with the 2018 midterms.
Well, here's what I tell your listeners to take note of. Here's Jill Biden living in the same house with Joe Biden, who's out doing interviews, who's out in meetings, and she's in her 60s, I believe. She's not as old as Joe. But I think she's in her 60s, in that age group that is considered at risk. But she's able to go out and meet with people. She's able to do interviews face-to-face. But Joe can't. So people ought to be asking themselves a question. Why is it that he can send his wife out, but he can't go out?
Do you have a theory on that?
Well, there are a number of people who have theories on that. Not the least of which is that he's a gaffe machine.
Yeah, and he's always been kind of this gaffe machine, it seems, and the cycle's no exception to that. So I guess if you're a Republican, that kind of gives you at least some hope that he can't make it to November 3rd without really muddying things up.
If they let him out, I'm not sure he could make it to the end of the week. My first contact with Joe Biden was the very first work that I did in D.C. when I ran the think tank, and that was Clarence Thomas's confirmation hearing. And you may recall that he'd gone through controversy then. He, as you said, Jeff, it's well known that he's surrounded in controversy, and like I said, he's a gaffe machine.
Well, and I think that those who watch these things in the media aren't really, they're not taking that into account. They're not making that big enough factor when they say that Biden's got this on November 4th. Congressman, we're up against a break here, but thanks for making time for us. We've got to do it again real soon.
Well, thanks for having me on, Jeff. And again, congratulations on your new gig down on the Gulf Coast.
Thank you very much. I really, really appreciate that. That was Congressman Gary Palmer of Alabama's 6th Congressional District. We got to get out of here, get to a break. We will return. This is FM Talk 106.5. Through